Okay, let's take a look at the topic of Chiddush and Talmud Torah. I'd like to begin with the following. A lot of times, and this is common in many, many places, that people say something along the lines of discussing learning Chumash, talk about Rashi on Chumash, which is, of course, a very important parish on Chumash. But they say that, of course, you know, Rashi wrote his parish Baruch HaKodesh. And what that is often presented to mean is that, you know, that's the final word, that it's, you know, it's like canonical work, that's the bottom line, right? Basically, in many, many shiurim, classes, etc., learning Chumash means really learning Rashi on Chumash. And while I'm all in favor of learning Rashi on Chumash, it shouldn't be confused with learning Chumash. Learning Chumash is learning Chumash. Rashi is one of the many, one of the very important, but one of the many tools in learning Chumash. It's not the same as learning Chumash. Rashi is a parish on Chumash. And when we say that Rashi wrote Baruch HaKodesh, which I have no doubts that he did, when we say that Rashi explained, interpreted Torah Baruch HaKodesh, I would thoroughly agree with that, except that I think it's important to add that everyone who learns Torah Lishma learns with Ruach HaKodesh. And the problem is not the statement about Rashi, and I'm not denying that there are greater and lesser degrees, but it's the exclusive application that I think is problematic. We're not going to talk about that point per se today, but what I want to discuss is when we're learning, let's say, Chumash and Rashi, ought our goal to be to just understand what Rashi's saying? I'm not saying one of our goals, but should that be per se the goal? Or should the goal be to understand what the Torah is telling us? And of course, making use of the various Mefarshim, including but not limited to Rashi, but not even limited just to the Mefarshim, but trying to understand what the Chumash itself is telling us, and Huadin, the Nach, and the Gemara, and the Midrash, and so on and so forth. Yes?
Rashi was a brilliant person and he really had like a gift for learning Torah, then that was Ruach HaKodesh. And the fact that he was able to put all these things together, like, that's where his Ruach HaKodesh was. Whereas Ruach HaKodesh is really like you're writing and like Hashem is like holding your hand. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so that's not really our topic for today, so I'm not going to get too involved in it,
okay.
But I'll give you a brief answer that at least in the sense that I mean it, I'm talking about something probably someplace between the two. Okay, Ruach HaKodesh is not the same as Nevuah. Okay, that's clear. Ruach HaKodesh means it's a certain type of Siyata Deshmaya. It means that it's that there's an inspiration, but it doesn't mean that it's like, you know, Kilu being dictated either. But in any case, that's not a talk today. I don't want to get too involved. My point is really not about Rashi and Chumash per se, or, you know, learning through Ruach HaKodesh. My point is understanding our place in Talmud Torah, okay, and particularly the area of Chiddush. So I'd like to begin with a Tosfot Yom Tov. Tosfot Yom Tov, one of the great Mefarshim on Mishnayot. Anyone who learns Mishnayot Be'iyun, I'm talking about going through, you know, Shitchi and whatever Bekiyot, but the person really learns Mishnayot. So certainly for centuries, the you know, in the sense that one would learn Gemara with as the foundation, as the bedrock, you learn Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot. Mishnayot, you learn Gemara, the Bar Tanura, and the Tosfot Yom Tov. That's the equivalent for Mishnayot of learning with Rashi and Tosfot. Okay, in no way meaning to, you know, minimize the contribution of perushim such as Kahati, which is a wonderful, wonderful perush, and one can gain a tremendous amount from. But I'm saying, but that's a different type of limud, and Kahati is relatively recent. It's not, but for many centuries the Tosfot Yom Tov was the Talmud of the Maharal and was a very, very major Achron. He wrote many important from his parish on the Mishnayot is but one of them. and they're all very much used by everyone. Tosa Yontov says something very fascinating. He says like this, Afal Pisha B'Gemara Lo Pirshu Kein. He quotes an interpretation of the Mishnah that's found in the Perush Mishnah to the Rambam. And he says that the Rambam explained the Mishnah like this. He says, even though the Gemara gives a different explanation of the Mishnah, and one would think, you know, so clearly the Rambam's wrong. It's against the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't explain the Mishnah that way. He says, no. Hoil inyan dina lo nafka mina. Since the Rambam is not arguing with the halacha of the Gemara, and as the mice of the Gemara, so he goes on, I'm skipping a few words, harshut nituna lefaresh. People have a right to interpret the Mishnah and to try to understand what the Mishnah is saying, even if it differs from the Gemara. This is a huge chiddush. I'm not even going to get involved in this chiddush. That's, you know, what he's saying here is revolutionary, although he's certainly right that the Rambam did this, but nonetheless, it's a big chiddush. I don't mean to say it's wrong. I'm just saying that it certainly is a chiddush to say this, but what is interesting is not so much what he's saying about Mishnayot, but what he says as the proof for his point. He says, after all, how do I know that this makes sense? How do I know this is true, that we have a right to interpret Mishnayot, that's okay for the Rambam to disagree with the Gemara's pshat in the Mishnah, even though it's not disagreeing with, as long as it's not disagreeing with the halacha of the Gemara? She'ein ani ro'eh hefresh bein perush ha-mishnah le-perush ha-mikra. Why should it be different, says the Tosa Yom Tov, than interpreting Tanakh? Sharashut netuna lefaresh mimikraot kasher einenu haroot chiburei haperushim shemimot hagemara. Says Tosa Yom Tov, after all, we all know it's a davar pashut that we have a right to explain the psukim of Tanakh differently than Chazal interpreted, as long as we're not disagreeing with the halacha. Everyone hear what the Tosa Yom Tov is saying?
I don't understand.
He's saying, okay, he wants to say a chiddush that it's okay to say the Mishnah means X, even though the Gemara says it means Y, as long as I'm not disagreeing with the halacha. Okay? He says, how do I know that? He says, well, why should it be different than interpreting Tanakh? And when it comes to Tanakh, it's a davar pashut, says the Tosa Yom Tov. Hear that? It's a davar pashut. That of course we have a right to interpret the psukim, right? And not to be limited to the pshat that the Gemara gives. And how does he know that that's true? Well, open up any classical mafarish on Chumash, and you'll see that that's true, right? To Adin Nevi'im and Ketuvim, but let's just, for the moment, talk about Chumash, right? You look at any of the mafarishim on Chumash, and you'll see that that's what they did. And that's true. What he's saying is clear from the Gaonim, who talk about it explicitly, and we're not going to do that today, but the Gaon, there are tshuvot of the Gaonim where they discuss this explicitly, that a person can interpret psukim differently than the, you know, Midrashei Chazal, and that there's nothing wrong with that. All the Mefarshim, from Rav Saadia Gaon and on, right, did this. And we have one great Rishon after another, including, and as well as many great Achronim, who did exactly this. And so Tosa Yom says, we see that that's the tradition that we have about interpreting psukim, and his chiddush is that he wants to apply this to interpreting Mishnayot as well, which is actually a big jump. It doesn't follow so naturally, but okay, that's not our topic for today. Yes?
So it's like, if you're like analyzing literature, like a poem or something, and like our teacher always tells that like you could like interpret it however you want, and like, you know, get from it whatever you want, like on the AP or whatever, like,
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right, and we'll get back to that point.
I'm saying, like, how is that allowed? Like, we could really, like, start, like,
you're 1,000% right, but if you'll allow me, I'm going to deal with that, I think, a little bit later, okay? Because I just want to go systematically, okay? It's a great question, and you're right, and I'm not going to refute what you're saying. I think that we have to incorporate what you're saying into the picture, okay? That's part of the story. It's not the whole story. It's part of the story. Okay, but let's see what they have to say, and then we'll try and deal with it, okay? If by the end we haven't dealt with it to your satisfaction, so bring me back to the point, okay? Stay there? Okay, so just be patient. We have to see things systematically. But your point is well taken. Okay, the Or HaChaim, okay? The Or HaChaim, one of the major, major Perushim on Chumash, deals with this explicitly and says almost word for word what the Tosu Yom Tov says in terms of Torah Shebichtav. says the following: Da ki b'shut lanu netuna l'fereish mashma'ut haktuvim b'ntivot ha'iyun v'yishuv hada'at. He says that we have license to interpret the meaning of the psukim based on our, you know, insight into it and reason. Hagam shekadmonu rishonim v'yishuv ba'ofen acher. Even though there are rishonim, there are earlier rishonim, earlier mefarshim who explained, came before and explained it differently. In other words, what's he saying? Even though Rashi suggests one pshat, and the Ibn Ezra suggests another, and the Ramban suggests, we can come along and say, you know, that this is what we think the psukim mean. Kishivim panim l'Torah. Ve'in anu musharim shalol l'ntot mitivrei rishonim. We are not warned or, you know, commanded not to deviate from what, from the Masora that we have. Ela bepirushim sheyishtaneh hadin lefihem. Only if we're talking about, you know, changing halacha. So we know that when it comes, that we have a klal that the Amoraim, right, can't argue with Tanaim. Okay, that the Amoraim can't argue with Tanaim. If an Amora says something and we quote a Mishnah or a Braita and it dispute, goes against what they said, it disproves it because we follow Tanaim. The Amoraim can't disagree with the Tanaim. For what reason? Machloket itself, but okay, not for right now. In any case, he says, however, aval biyishuv haktuvim, but interpreting psukim umashmaut, in terms of interpreting psukim, matzinu lehem bekama mekomot shepirshu b'ofan acher. But we don't find, and in Lehefef, we find very clearly that the Amoraim certainly differed with the Tanaim about interpretations of psukim. They suggested a pshat different than what the Tanaim said. They didn't change, they didn't argue with the halacha of the Tanaim. But in terms of pshat in the psukim, of course. And this is what we find in terms of Amoraim relating to Tanaim, in terms of Rishonim and Gaonim and Rishonim relating to Chazal, right? That the process of interpretation, of understanding, of analyzing what the Tanakh is telling us does not end with Chazal, nor does it end with Rashi, or at any other point for that matter. Okay? That's what the Or HaChaim is telling us very clearly. The Rashbam, and I'm sure you're familiar with this Rashbam. It's a very famous Rashbam. Yes.
What's the difference between what the Or HaChaim is saying and what the Tosafot is saying?
I think they're saying the same basic thing. I just wanted to show you two examples of it. I can show you many more, but I'm going to show you two examples of it. And I think that they're very much, very, very similar. The Rashbam. Okay. By the way, I should start with this, but I tell you what we're going to do, at least for the first half of this discussion, is either, depending on where you're coming from, may either be like, you're going to walk out either with, why did we waste time on that? That was like so obvious, of course. Like, what other possibility is there? Or, that was so ridiculously radical, like, how come we're not throwing stones? Or maybe we'll throw, I don't know, whatever. One or the other. So I wanted to show you a little bit of what some of the Mefarshim say. There's much more we can quote, but I just want to give you a little bit taste of it. Some of the very important sources in some of the classical Rishonim, Achronim, etc. The Rashbam, okay, one of the great Bali HaTosfot, grandson of Rashi, the older brother, and Rashbam was the older brother of Rabbeinu Tam, right? Rashbam was Rabbeinu Tam's older brother. Rashbam wrote one of the very important Pshat-oriented Pirushim on Chumash. Rashbam was old enough to learn with Rashi himself. He was a young adult when Rashi died, and the Rashbam wrote Perushim, including on Gemara, while Rashi was still alive, and he learned together with Rashi. And in a very, very famous passage, I'm sure you're familiar with it, I'm just mentioning it because it would be chaval to skip it, the Rashbam says in Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Bet, of Breshit as follows: Ela toldot Yaakov yaskilu v'yavinu avei sechel mashlem dunu rabotenu ki ein mikra yotzei midei pshuta. Okay, we know that in addition to whatever drasha we have, there's the pshan, the psukim, avki grash al torah be'elu bata lamdenu lo dienu b'mizot hapshat hagadot v'alachot v'adinim al yidei arichut halashon v'alidei shloshim shtayim midot shol Rabbi Elazar ben Ashur Yosei Glili v'alidei shloshim shtayim midot shol Rabbi Yishmael. True that everything that Chazal tell us, all the halachot and drashim, this is very, very, very important, the most important part of Torah, V'arishonim mitol chasidutam itaskul in tod acharei adrashot sheheni karen. That's what the earlier mefarshim largely involved themselves with, and to a large degree he's talking about. Okay. Mitol kach lo hurgalu ba'omek pshuto shel mikra. And as a result, they didn't involve themselves so much in pshat. L'fish amru chachamim al tarbu b'necham b'gayon v'gam amru ha'osek b'mikra midvein amida, and so on and so forth. And so learning pshat wasn't such a popular thing. I was 18 years old. I learned the whole shas. And I didn't know that ain mikra yotzei midei pshuto. And here's the key part that I want to do with you: these next few sentences. And so too Rashi, avi imi, my grandfather, right? Rabbeinu Shlomo, Rashi. Avi imi, the father of my mother, okay. Meir enei gola, right? The light of the one who enlightened the exile Jews in the Galus. So I said, Shepiresh Torah nevim uktuv, explained Tanakh. Natan lev lefaresh pshuto shel mikra. Rashi also decided that he wanted to explain the pshat in the pesukim. Vafani Shmuel ben Remeir chotno zatzal, and I too, this is the Shmuel, the son of Remeir, who was the son-in-law of Rashi. Nidvakachti imo ulefanav. I argued with Rashi himself about many of the interpretations that he said. Vihodali, and he agreed to me. He admitted to me that she'ilu hayalo pnai, if he had the time and opportunity to do it, he had tzarich lasod perushim achirim. He should give other interpretations. Lefi apashtut hamitchadshim bechol yom. In other words, what is the Rashbam telling us here? The Rashbam is saying that Rashi himself, this is what he wants us to understand, that Rashi himself did not consider his Perush to be a static work. He didn't consider it to be like, this is the final maskana. Whatever I wrote in my Perush, this is the last word on what it means. Right? That wasn't his attitude. Rashi himself said, you know what? It's an ongoing process of discovery. And what we have in Rashi on Chumash is a snapshot of what Rashi thought about the Perush on Chumash at a particular shlav. That doesn't mean that Rashbam comes along and says, you know, well, I think that there's some things that we should explain differently. And Rashi says, you're right, and there are things that I would change. It doesn't mean he regretted everything he wrote. I'm not saying that. I think that's a misreading of what the Rashbam is saying. He's saying that it's not a finished product, and it never will be a finished product. And if I have another 100 years, so there are things that would change. If I have another 50 years, or whatever it is, another 20, it will constantly be changing, because we constantly discover and reevaluate, and that's the nature of learning. Okay, that's the nature of learning. Yes?
Isn't Rashi's, methods of
Let's say it differently. Rashi's definition of pshat is different than the Rashbam's definition of pshat.
Right. But I'm saying in general, pshat means just like saying the words like one would think, but that's not like Rashi's approach.
That's correct. But Rashi would say that again, there are different, and this is a whole different discussion, there are many different approaches to what is meant by pshat, okay, found in different, Rishonim, Achronim, etc. Now everyone has the same idea of what is meant by pshat. That itself is a very big question. What is meant by pshat? Right? But what the Rashbam is saying here, I think, and again, there are different interpretations of this Rashbam, but let's take what I think he's saying, and certainly the minimum of what he's saying is that Rashi did not consider his perush to be anything canonical. It wasn't meant to be like, okay, this is it, and you're not allowed to interpret differently. It's not what Rashi himself says. As reported by the Rashbam, we can certainly trust the Rashbam. If we can trust anyone. Rashbam says, Rashi himself said, of course, there are things that, you constantly revise, you constantly move on, you constantly try to do better in terms of understanding what the Pesukim are saying. Okay, yes.
This is kind of like what Ariel was saying, but how far can you take that? That it's an evolutionary process.
As I said to Ariel, lot. Okay, we can't do it all in 1 second, la. Okay? I'm not going to give you a specific formula, but I'm going to try to give you a direction. Okay? And I think that, but that's the last part. Okay? First, let's start with the first start with the idea of whether we should be mechayesh at all, then we can discuss how and to what degree. Okay. Be'ezra Hashem, I think that the Yisodot are here. We have to, okay. The Netziv. Okay, everyone's heard of the Netziv. Yes, the Netziv was great Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, which was the yeshiva in Europe at its golden age. It was considered the yeshiva. And the next source. The Hakdama of the Hamek Davar. Okay, Hamek Davar is the parish of the Netziv on Chumash. Okay, Netziv has a phenomenal parish on Chumash called Hamek Davar, very, very important. And he was tremendous Gadol Hador, to say the least. He was the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Netziv was an incredible Baki in all areas of Torah. Just an incredible person, Bechlal. His parish on Chumash is tremendous, tremendous parish. And in the Hakdama, he addresses the question, of why am I writing a parish on Chumash, right? We already have Rashi, we have the Ibn Ezra with the Ramban, with Rashban, we have, the Malbim, and so on. I have all these parishes. What am I writing a parish on Chumash for? And he gives an answer that's fascinating and important. He says as follows. Ukvar biyarnu, shu mitzvah aseh min ha-Torah lishmor v'lasod kol divrei ha-Torah. V'al zeh nichrat ha-brit b'arvot Moav, l'mod u'lameh lishmor v'lasod, u'perish lishmor v'lasod, hu l'va'er u'lchadesh b'Torah kol ha-efshar, k'mo shachachnu b'sefer v'yikra yutet hei. The Netziv claims, and this is unbelievable, the Netziv claims as follows. I'm going to paraphrase slightly what he says, but if you look in Vayikra as well, in Perish on Vayikra, and what he says here, it's mind-blowing. He says like this. There's a mitzvah aseh, says the Netziv, and I don't know about counting in the 613 or not, or how he does that, I don't know. But he says there's a mitzvah d'oraita. Yes, a mitzvah d'oraita. To be mechadesh. He says that if a person merely, with quotation marks, if a person merely knows all of Torah that up to his time, right? Merely knows everything in Tanakh and in Shas and all the Midrashei Chazal and all the Mefarshim, Rishonim, Achronim and Shulchan Aruch, all knows the game, knows all of that, but he doesn't add his own insights and analysis and discoveries. So it's a beetle of a mitzvah asay. That's what the Netziv says. Pretty easy to see where the Netziv stands on this issue, right? And so the Netziv says very clearly, and then he goes on to say, "V'nakel lahavin." It's easy to understand. Ki kmo she'i afshar lechacham b'sitrei ha'teva litbarech b'vavo ki amad al kol sitrei ha'teva. I'm going to skip a couple of words. V'lo od el afilu ma she'ala b'chakirato im ein lo b'china brura ki kachu yachol yot she'yavo re'eu b'dora shacharav v'chakru be'ofan acher v'yistor binyan hakodmo. He starts by saying like this. In science, right, in science, no one can say at any point either that we've discovered everything there is to know, or even that everything that we think we know is necessarily true. Probably the most common phrase that you hear by scientists, doctors, etc., and I don't mean this in any way as a denigrating thing. There's a tremendous amount that science and medicine does know, but, and there's a tremendous amount that it's given us and we benefit from in a not at all, in a critical way. But there is a certain aspect that we have to be aware of as well. Sometimes, a little bit of attitude, and I'll give you an example to what I'm talking about. But a common phrase that we hear in terms of sciences, or in medicine, health, we used to think, dot, 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 but now we know. Right? And it's very interesting, whatever is thought at the moment, because this we know, right? So, for sure. And, we used to be ignorant, that was last year, but now we know exactly. And over the course of my lifetime, I can tell you, and this may be true even over the course of yours, but certainly over the course of my lifetime, I can tell you that what I was told as a child, I was supposed to be eating because it's very healthful and it's good for you, and this is how you're supposed to. This is what. It's very different today than what it was then. It's changed many times over the years. But an even more striking example So over the course of the birth of my various children, I had really, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, you know, when it's time to leave the hospital, it's always very comical, because part of the procedure is that they have this nurse who comes over to you and explains to you all the things you need to know about taking care of the baby. Okay? Now, by the time you get to the ninth child, you have a much better idea of what you have to do to take care of the baby than this nurse. But okay, Beseder. And she gives you all these instructions. And one of the things that they tell you is, when you put the baby down, you know, to sleep, what position are you supposed to put them in? Okay, it wasn't a... No. I'm saying they come and they tell you, you know, and they tell you very emphatically. They say, you've got to be careful to put them down like this, because otherwise, you know, God forbid, whatever. They say it very emphatically and, you know, and with great certainty. And I will tell you, over the course of our nine children, from the first through the ninth, they have gone through virtually every conceivable position other than taking them by the ankles and tying a rope and hanging them in the closet. It's the only one they haven't gone to yet. And I'm waiting to see what's going to happen with this one. I don't know. Maybe that that's what they're going to tell us. But I can tell you, they have told us at one point very emphatically that it must be on the back. And at another point, they told us emphatically it must be on the side. And another time, they told us emphatically it must be on the stomach. And each time, we used to think, but now we know, and like with certainty, that this is the way you have to do it. Now, I'm not trying to bash, you know, the doctors or anything. I'm just saying that at any given point, we may think that we know, but there are things that we're going to find out a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, right? There was a time when people thought, where doctors thought, and it was the common assumption, that it was good for you to smoke, that it was healthy, that it helped the digestive system, it was good for you, and there was a time, not that far back. You have to go back, you know, maybe 60 years, whatever. About 60 years. That was the belief, right? And changes. Says the Nesiv, there's no guarantee, as a matter of fact, we know that it's not the case, that we know everything there is to know. There are a lot of things we simply don't know. And there are things that we believe to be true that we're going to find out down the road are not true. That's how it works in science and medicine. Whereas, once reading this book about the history of physics, this is like blew me away. At the end of the 19th century, okay, I may be off by a few years, but I'm pretty sure this is, I think it was like a few years before 1900, the late 1800s, scientists believed that they had discovered and that they had down clearly all the laws of physics. They had all the principles down, and they had it all figured out. There were three small questions that were tiny little details that they weren't clear, they couldn't explain. But other than those three little details that they figured, you know, we'll figure this out in the course of the next few years, they figured, okay, you know, by 1900 we've got it all down, for sure. We've got it all figured out, we've got all the principles of science down. Now those three little questions that they had led to all of Einstein's theories, and all of quantum mechanics, and so on and so forth. And over the course of the 20th century, you know, this huge revolution in almost everything that was believed in physics, right? And so much of what was believed until then was thrown out and replaced, and so on and so forth, right? This idea that just because, you know, we think that we know everything, but of course, the process of learning is a process of discovery. And we're constantly finding out that there are things we thought that were not true, and things that we didn't know that now we do know, and so on and so forth. It's an ongoing process. Says the Nesiv, just as it's obvious that this is true in science, and you just look at the history of science as a davar pashut, right? And the Nesiv was a very broadly educated person, aside from knowing Kol HaTorah Kula inside out, but he was also very knowledgeable in secular areas as well. In any case, the Nesiv says that just like that's true in science, that's true in Torah as well. Kach yefshar litbarech lechoker b'teva haTorah lamod al kol hashinuyim v'anidrash sum lev v'lomar ki hu amar al kulan v'gam ma shebi'er ein hochacha shekiven l'amita shel Torah mikol makom aleinu lasot ma shebi'adenu. Says the Nesiv, nobody can say, no person, no generation can say, that's it, we have it all figured out, and everything we think is correct, and there's nothing more to discover. The knowledge of Torah is infinite and endless, and it's a constant process of clarification and discovery, and it doesn't end doesn't end at the end of the period of the Maharam. It doesn't end at the end of the period of Rashi or of the Rishonim Bechlal or of the Achrom, whatever. It's an ongoing process, and that's our mitzvah. And then the Nesivut goes on to clarify details, but that's the basic idea. There's a beautiful comment by the Bali HaTosfot in a sefer called Moshe of Zekenim. It's a collection of comments by the Bali HaTosfot on Chumash. And Vayikra Perek Yud, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Chazal tell us in Gemara and Kedushin that Darosh Darash, in that Pasuk, is the center of the Torah if you count by words. Right? There's a center by letters, there's a center by words, there's a center by Pesukim. The middle, the core of the Torah by words, is Darosh Darash. Okay? Darosh Darash says Tosfot.
Is this by words?
By words. Darosh Darash. Okay?
Yeah. Are
the very bottom of the page. Moshe of Zekenim, Vayikra Yud Tetzai. Chatiya Torah Darosh Mikan, V'Darash Mikan. Af al pi shedarshu ha-Torah v'darshu aleha tamim v'sodot otan darot sham d'lufanecha. It says, where does Darosh Darash allude to? So he says a beautiful idea. I don't think this is at all pshat, but this is still a beautiful idea. He says, Darosh Darash, even though those previous generations, those who came before us, have been doresh, have, you know, interpreted the Torah, etc., and discovered all kinds of things, gam atad darosh, the Kabel Schar, right? We too should be Doresh and seek out and investigate Torah and try to discover new things in it as well. The what's fascinating about it is that if you look at the Psukim, where Darosh Darash is, where is Darosh Darash, right? This time about what? Who remembers the context? What's going on in Vayikra Perak Yud? Remember? This is when Moshe comes running to Aaron and says, how come you messed up with the Karbana? Why didn't you do what I instructed you to do? And Aaron starts explaining to him why he did what he did and why what Moshe thought was wrong. And in the end, it says that Moshe was very pleased with what Aaron said and he agreed with him. And this is could not be a more suitable context for Darosh Darash. And it's the idea that even when we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, even when we're talking about the source of Torah, right, there's always more to clarify and discover and to figure out. Okay, let's turn the page, please. Yes, please. But just a drop louder so I can hear you.
Oh, wait, I understand the idea that, like there's always new things to learn Torah and it's not ever, like, whatever. But I feel like it goes against everything to say that if we could say that, like, at some point what we thought was true is not necessarily true in Torah. Like, isn't Torah supposed to be something that, like, was established and then it's, like, it lasts forever and it's true for always and, like, whatever. So, like, aren't you supposed to, like everything's true in every generation and it's not wrong. Like, science, we said, we thought that has to be true, but now we decided it's not true. Like, Torah, I feel like
so let me clarify. I'm not saying that, oh, this guy would say, you know, what? I'm not saying Kasham that, like, oh, you know what? We have this pasuk here. No, that's wrong. I'm not saying that's not what I mean. I mean that just because we have an interpretation of what the pshan in that pasuk is, right? That doesn't mean that we stop trying to clarify and to see if we can do better and have and see that which was not seen by previous generations.
Like, can I say,
so I will show you that there are, so if you learn through, for example, let's take one example, you learn through the Ramban on Chumash, yeah. You'll see how many times the Ramban says exactly that. Okay. Now, do I think that I'm in the same position as the Ramban to critique Rashi? Obviously not, right? But nonetheless, it means that, but the Ramban, with the greatest respect and admiration for Rashi, she expresses very clearly and nonetheless, critiques Rashi's interpretation, not critiquing Rashi, but saying that, you know, it's not that, okay, well, all I'm interested in is what did Rashi say? What do I think is being said here in this pasuk, right? And that's, and I understand that that's a difficult concept. I very much am keenly aware of it. And, you know, it's not because I don't think that, you know, Rashi is a giant or I'm buying Lehefer. But the process of learning demands of us a certain gevura that we're going to get to in just a little bit, okay? But bear with me. I'm going to try and clarify a little bit. Let's please turn the page, okay? Because we're only getting warmed up. The Gemara Megillah, this is a wild Gemara. I would have never believed that there's such a Gemara if I hadn't learned it myself. It's a wild Gemara. Don't trust my source sheet. Go back to the shelves, or go back if you think that I've changed all the Gemaras in MMY. You can go to a different place and check out the Gemaras and see if there's such a Gemara. It's a wild Gemara. The Gemara says like this. Gemara is discussing how do we know that Megillat Esther was written by Ruach HaKodesh. Right, famous Gemara. The Gemara says that this Tana says this, and this Tana says this, and they each have a pshat, and they go through these different rayas, and we come to the end, and finally Shmuel gives his suggestion. Shmuel, who was an Amora, right? Shmuel's an Amora. He comes along and he gives an interpretation that's different than all of the Tanam. Not Stam Tanam, we're talking about the greatest of the Tanam. We're talking about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara says that each pshat of the Tanam one could argue with. Rabbi Akiva's pshat is not conclusive for this reason, and Rabbi Meir is not compelling for that reason. It goes through the whole list, and then it gets to the end and says, "De Shmuel vaday let lepircha." The last line of this source. Shmuel's pshat is ironclad, no answer. Amar Ravina, so says Ravina, "Hainu de amre inshe." That's what people say. And as we can apply to this, the folk expression, Tava chada pilpula charifta mimale tzane kare. Okay? Loosely translated, that one spicy pepper is better than an entire basket, right, of cucumbers. Okay? Meaning that, you know, it's not quantity, it's quality. They have, like, Shmuel's, like, one sharp answer, his strong, powerful answer is better than all this whole basket full of Tanan. It's an incredible Gemara, right?
Can you
saying
translate?
That. So, I mean, right. Tava, better, chada, one, pilpata, charifta, sharp pepper. Okay, mimale tsane, than a basket full of kare. Kare is a type of vegetable. I think it's translated as a gourd, but I'm not so good with my vegetables, so I could, you know, have a little trouble, I guess, with vegetable section of the supermarket. So, okay, Seder. But the point is that he's saying that it's saying that Shmuel's answer is sharper than all these Tanan put together. It's an incredible statement, right? But it certainly says something about the idea that, right, just because we have Rabbi Akiva's pshat and we have Rabbi Meir's pshat, forget about Rash, right? Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Meir, and so on. But Shmuel comes along and he gives a better answer. That's what Gemara seems to say. Now, are there people who try to reinterpret this Gemara? There certainly are. However, that's the pshat in Gemara. The Shalah, the great Shalah Kadosh, comes along and says as follows. He has a whole discussion. He starts off with this Gemara. He says, Emet hadabar, tava pilpula charifta. He says that which the Gemara says here is emet. What I think the Shalah is saying, not that, you know, he's implying that there are other Gemaras that are not emet. He's trying to say, this is very real. And don't try to reinterpret that. No, it's really, that's how it is. He goes on to say, Uperek b'mem adlikim, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Amar Rava, b'shash machnisim adam l'din, when a person is brought to judgment after they die. So, sho'alim oto, there are a series of questions that they're asked. The first question is a different topic, not for now, but the first question is, nasata v'natata b'emunah, when you did your monetary dealings, when you were involved in financial matters, did you do it with integrity? Did you do it with honesty? Were you faithful and honest when you dealt in monetary matters? That's the first question that a person's asked. It continues. Number two, nasa is after that, pilpalta bichachma. Were you palpel? And there's a play on the word pilpul acharifta, there's a play on this. Obviously, pilpalta from the word pilpul, meaning like analysis, you know, like. And then he goes on to say, "Aval kol zeh ne'amar al pilpul shel emet." That's only if it's true pilpul.
Wait, what's
pilpul? Did you, pilpul is a very hard word to translate, but it means like iyun. It means like, you know, really analyze, you know, being analytical and analyzing, and not just like, you know, superficially going through it, but like really, you know, trying to figure out the depths of what's really going on. Okay.
In learning,
right? Time of learning. So he goes on to say, "V'achol zeh ne'amar pilpul shel emet," which I'm not going to explain right now because he comes back to it at the end. He says, "V'achol adam." Listen carefully to what he says here. "V'achol adam lechadesh Pilei Pla'ot Bechol Halakha V'Halakha Mikol Kushot V'Tirutzim. A person can mechadesh tons of, fantastic amounts of stuff in each and every halakha. U'papel aleim v'msod rachim ezu derech ha'pshat ha'emet. You can figure out what's the correct pshat and what's really going on. Hein b'talmud, whether we're talking about understanding the correct pshat in the Gemara. Hein b'rashi v'tosvot. U'kemoshim problem v'tosvot in Rashi. That's what he says. He says, just like Tosvot, right? Just like Tosvot comes along, what does Tosvot do on every page of the Gemara? How could Rashi say this, but it's against this Gemara, but it doesn't make sense because of that, and no, you should interpret the Gemara differently, it's not accurate. Turn to any page, Kimon on Shas, and you'll see the Balei HaTosfot disagreeing with Rashi and then arguing and questioning and clarifying and very often rejecting. Kein nuchal lohosip bepilpul la'ayin l'tareit ha'kushot sha'tosa makshim al Rashi. So too, just like Tosfot asks on Rashi, we can look at what Tosfot asks on Rashi, and there are answers we can give, and we can explain why Rashi said what he did and what Rashi meant. And we don't say, okay, well, Tosfot asked Akasha, so that's it. I'm going to answer. I'm going to, defend Rashi against Tosfot. What do you mean? I mean, how can I argue with Tosfot? V'chein shar kushyot shatosfot makshim b'sugya d'shmaita. Tosfot asked Akasha on the Gemara. We shouldn't say that, well, Tosfot asked Akasha, how can I argue with Tosfot? And, say, well, I'll give an answer. No, it's a process. Kein nuchal losif. I'm sorry. Let's try that again. Here we go. HaTorah nitna l'chol Yisrael. The Torah is given to all the Jewish people, not just to Rabbi Akiva and to Abai and Rava and to Rashi and to Tosfot. It's given to all of us. Ki keter Torah munach l'chol. I'd like to read on just a little bit before getting, because it's very important to see the full extent of what he says. Listen carefully to what he says. It's unbelievable. Va'al yachshov. A person should not think, as many of us, as we hear what the Tosfot Yom Tov and the Or HaChaim and the Nesiv say. It says the Shalach Kadosh, don't think, ma'ani umi ani. Who am I? What am I? La'ayin v'lelech b'gedolot v'niflaot. I'm going to disagree with Rashi, I'm going to say a different pshat than the Rambam. What do you mean? How can I do that? Chutzpah, who am I? I'm nobody. Why? Ki halomeid l'shem shamayim. If a person is really learning l'shem shamayim, we'll define that in just a little bit. Umiyagea et atzmo. And a person really exerts themselves. Balimud az yagati umatzati tamen. A person can have faith and confidence that they will learn and arrive at the truth. B'chol eila pilpulim asher oraita hu demartich bei him mar kaval umidat hamalchut shenikra torah shval peh shemidat hadin. With leaving aside the Kabbalistic portions of it, basically what he's saying is this is what Torah Shval Peh is all about. That it's an ongoing process that all of us are partners in, that all of us are part of the process of discovering what the Torah is saying. Okay, just one side, I want to just finish what he says, and then I'm glad to take any questions or comments. V'davka v'pilpul shal emet. Okay, and this is only true by true analysis, true chidusha. Aval pilpul shel sheker dover shkarim lo yichon. Okay, and skip the next little bit because it's the riot way saying. Says that his point, but his point is as follows: that doesn't mean for a person to say new things, as in things that are just made up, things that are just fabricated, right? It means in terms of discovering what the sources are saying. In other words, not say like, I'll just give my opinion. I feel like saying this. I'm going to come up with a clever idea. I'm going to say a pshat that has no basis in anything. No, it means I'm learning the Gemara. What is the Gemara really saying? I'm learning Rashi. What's Rashi really saying? I'm learning the Psukim in Tanakh. What is the Chumash telling me? What is this Navi telling me? What is really being said? What's the real Omek HaPshat? And I'm trying to pull out of it what is truly being said. So in terms of that, that's a project that we're all not only have license to do, but we have an obligation to do. Okay. Yes, I was keeping you waiting longest. Okay. No stupid questions, please. But night loud and clear so we can all hear you.
Is that only for men or for women also?
That's a good question. And I think that we need that it's impossible for me to tackle that question without a broader discussion of Talmud Torah and women.
Is this
right?
Like applied women, or is it, that was?
I'm saying I can't answer that without a broader context of Talmud Torah and women. You know what I'm saying? It's impossible. You can only begin to answer that if you try, you know, deal with the question of like, what should woman's role be in Talmud Torah b'chlam?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to try to answer at the moment. B'li neder. I'm very happy to try to discuss that topic, but it's not something that I can deal with as a 1 minute tangent. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a good question. It's a good question. But let me answer it this way: to the degree that a person is involved in Talmud Torah, this is an explanation of what Talmud Torah is. Okay, and that's a partial answer. Okay, I owe you more of an answer, but say it. Yes. I thought you had your hand up. Yes, please.
it seems like such a non-Jewish idea that, like, it's better to make more confusion. Like, I'm not even that kind. Like, obviously it's good to, like, learn to keep being confusion, but, like, you always want, like, the importance of the Torah, and, like that's, like our foundation of Judaism, like, it's because it needs to be, like, very confusion. And, like, so just, it seems like these, like, opinions are giving such low value to, like,
I don't think that's true at all. I think that every one of the people that we saw, who are, by the way, amongst the greatest of the Rishonim and the Achronim, you understand? They're not like, someone off the beaten track. I didn't take anyone who would not be viewed by everyone as being Mash, not just mainstream, but like amongst the greatest of the great. You know what I'm saying? Like, every single one of these are, Mash, like the core of our Masara. Okay, at different points in different generations, but everyone that we looked at is universally accepted as being at the core of our Masara. And they all agree with what you're saying. Of course, Masara is fundamental, and I'm not Chasom disagreeing with that. Kiyuzeh, saying is that of course, it's critical to gain our foundation and direction, etc., from everything we received, and you have to know that, and you have to incorporate that, and you have to be guided by it, and that's what gives you your. But there's a process of constantly working on trying to discover more and more of the truth that's buried in Torah. It's not a finished process. It's something that the Torah is infinite, and that we're constantly trying to dig and dig and dig in it. It's not a steer. It's not a steer at all. It's like saying that, taking the Nitziv's analogy, right, taking the Nitziv's analogy, which I think is a very powerful one, it would be ridiculous for someone to say, I want to be very creative in physics or in medicine or whatever, so I'm going to just, I'm not going to take any, I'm not going to study anything that's been said before, anything that's been discovered before, any of the existing knowledge or wisdom about whatever branch of knowledge, I'm just going to go in and try to discover everything for myself and start from the beginning. Of course, you're not going to get any place. On the other hand, the very essence of science is constantly trying to discover new truths and clarify and fine tune and discover what mistakes and so on and so forth. That's part of the process. Yes.
Disagreeing with Rashi, because you say, oh, and based on this, and based on this, and based on this, I can see that maybe that Rashi doesn't make so much sense. But even to get to that place where you could make all those connections, because you're such a vast span of knowledge, you're already not necessarily a gadol, but you've been learning for a really significant amount of time. I mean, does that apply to someone like a yeshiva boy, Shana Aleph, or does that, like, because I didn't want to say a girl that we left up in the air. But at what point can you decide that a third grader learning Rashi be like, oh, well, I think this. I'm like,
Right. So I think that, just bear with me for a little bit more. It's not going to be today, but bear with me for just a little bit more. We haven't seen everything yet. Okay? So as I said before already, sometimes starting with Ariel, moving on, that we're not there yet. We have to see. We're only in the middle. We're going to see more, and then hopefully we'll have a direction for answering that. I'm not going to try to answer whether it's third grade or fifth grade, Kilu,
right.
But you know, in terms of like details, but the general direction, Ezra Hashem, I am going to try to give you a general direction. Now I'm going to try to give you, I'm going to try to show you what Chazal say about it, okay? And there's some very important things that Chazal say about it. Okay, very quickly, and I'm going to try to wrap up. Yes?
I'm sorry, no, I just missed it. What did Shmuel say that the Shlah was commenting on that it is 100%
right? That it is 100%? No, not what Shmuel said, but what Ravina said about Shmuel and all the other Tanaim. In other words, this idea that you could have, that even though the Tanaim said what they did, but Shmuel can come along and give a better answer, right? That's a very big yisod in Torah. That's what the Shalah is saying. Ravina comes along. But we didn't go into the details of what they're discussing. In other words, each of them, the topic happens to be how you know that Megillat Esther was written Baruch HaKodesh. Okay? So various Tanaim and Shmuel give different suggestions of how you know, and then the Gemara says, well, this is not so compelling. Shmuel, he gave a great answer, right? Shmuel is not only the latest of them, but he's in a different era. They were Tanaim, he's an Amora, right? And nonetheless, the Gemara says, wow, his answer is better than all their answers. It's a radical thing to say. I'm not saying it. The Gemara says, so then the Shalah is saying, you know, that's a very big yisod. Okay. Ashley, you heard the Seder? You sure? Yes, but I'm not done. So, okay, yes.
Question?
Yes.
Yes. So, discussing and having Hebrew Machshava about like Chumrah, and how if you're supposed to like.
That's our next topic. Okay. Yes.
If you're supposed to like work on like. Every single, you can make sure that like you're never speaking Lashon Hara, like whatever that you have, it's like all your list and surveys, whatever, before you take on Chumrah. So if you're supposed to like, you know, do Chumrah and then like while you're still working on other things, so it's the same thing. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, if Siv said like, you know, someone who like learns Torah completely, whatever, but doesn't, you know, make any position is like not like whatever, it's not good. So like, are you supposed to try to perfect all, like learn all of Torah, all Shas, whatever first? Because that would take a lifetime, or you just make like two positions, like,
It's a great question. And I think the answer is that the answer is probably someplace between the two, meaning that obviously you need to know, you know, you need to have, make two distinctions. One is that the difference between knowing what you're talking about locally and globally. Number two, there's a question of how tentatively, you know, I think that the process, you know, like, it's important to understand that we're constantly trying to understand things better and to be mechadesh, and that, you know, but to also realize that, yeah, of course, I have to realize the tentative nature of what I'm suggesting if I don't know everything yet, so obviously, you know, I may discover that I'm wrong. That's always true, because we never know everything. So, you know, there's not a simple answer to that. That's a good question. But I hope that we're going to see a little bit of direction. Ezra Hashem. Yes, we have to stop here, but Ezra Hashem, we will wrap it up next time. Behaim, Shabbat Shalom. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.